We are back in session. I've had a request from Commissioner Fritz if people could please, particularly the council, she's having a little bit of troubles hearing and understanding what we're saying. So if we could speak a little more into the microphone, it'll help her understand what we're saying. So with that, item 90, please, Carla. Time certain.
Portland Streetcar Annual Report for 2019.
Come on up. Welcome. Thank you for being here. Oh, I'm sorry, Commissioner Daly.
Thank you, Mayor.
I apologize. Got ahead of myself there.
We're here today for the annual report to council from Portland Streetcar, which continues to provide accessible transit to thousands of Portland residents in the central city on emission-free, renewable energy. I'm excited for you to hear about the success of the Grand Avenue business access and transit lane that was installed this year, or was it last year? I think last year. Yeah. It gives us a great starting point for rolling out the Rose Lane project and providing faster, more reliable transit across the city. Here to present the report and answer any questions you may have is Catherine Levine, who is our PBOT Streetcar Division Manager, Dennis Allen, the Chair of the PSI Volunteer Board of Directors, and Dan Bauer, Executive Director of Portland Streetcar, Inc. Welcome, everyone. Please remember to state your names for the record before you begin.
Good morning, Mayor.
Good morning.
Commissioners. I'm Catherine Levine with Portland Transportation, and today is our sixth annual Portland Streetcar Report to Council. As Commissioner Udaly noted, speaking today will be Dan Bauer, Executive Director of Portland Streetcar, Inc., Dennis Allen, Chair of the PSI Board, and guests. I wanted to thank you for the opportunity to bring forward an overview of streetcar service in 2019 and acknowledge that there have been challenges. But we've also found solutions to some of those challenges, and I'd like to quickly call out three before moving to the formal report. First, in 2019, Streetcar participated in PBOT's pilot Red Lane project. This was important for our system because we have a location on our system on Northeast MLK, just south of the Convention Center, which is a transit-only lane. And we've had a safety issue with cars encroaching into that lane and getting stuck. The Red Lane pilot project used that location, and since the installation of those improvements, we've not had a single incursion into that lane. So from a safety perspective, we consider that very successful. Secondly, as you know, we had last fall a derailment near PSU at 5th and Montgomery. It was actually the second derailment in that location. Since then, we've worked with a signal engineering firm and designed a secondary system, which has been installed. I know we had quite a discussion about shunt last time, but should there ever be a loss of shunt, there is now a mass detector in place that will prevent switch movement, and with that, we hope to avoid any future derailments in that location. Thirdly, I'd like to call out our focus on safety, and more specifically in the past year with our safety officer's guidance, we've really looked at slip, trip, and falls. So I believe one of the handouts you have is a brochure that PSI created for us. Under the current reporting rules to the state and federal agencies, we report on slip, trip, falls that result in medical transport or may have involved the train because of the fact that the train was moving. There actually were 16 of those in the prior year. But they don't tell the whole story. So as part of our safety program, Streetcar has been recording data on every incident, every slip, trip, and fall. So reportables may have been 16, but there were actually 35 slip, trip, and falls. Gathering data, event recorded data, location data, data on the demographics of the folks who are affected, is designed to help us figure out how we can educate our customers, how we can mitigate any factors in the environment, and try to bring that number down. Our goal is to have a safe and comfortable system for everyone to ride, especially on a low floor transit system. So in the future, you'll be hearing more about the mitigations we take to ensure that, but I just wanted to bring those three items to your attention.
Well, and if I could just say, I really appreciate it slips, trips, and falls, because Oregon has a particularly high rate of serious injury and fatality in seniors who fall for a variety of reasons, and it's gotten a lot worse in the last 20 years, so I appreciate the focus on that.
Thank you. And with that, I would like to turn to Dan Bauer, who will provide the formal presentation.
Thank you, Catherine. Again, I'm Dan Bauer, director of Portland Streetcar Inc. We're the private nonprofit with a board of directors that sits between TriMet and the city and is helping advocate for and help manage the streetcar program. This is a fairly quick presentation. It's nice to check in annually on what's happening with streetcar. I think it's important for everybody to take a step back and recognize what's actually working and working very, very well. Commissioner Udaly, earlier we were talking, maybe a month ago, we were talking about how we don't see each other enough, and it's because things are going well, and that's largely due to the fact that Catherine is a fantastic manager of the streetcar system. So thank you.
I mean, I like you, Dan, but I have no complaints about it.
Yeah, if we see each other, yeah. Things are bad. Okay, right. But importantly, we do run, the city does own and runs a 100% renewable electric transit system. Very important to recognize. It carries 13,000 to 15,000 passengers every day. That's more than any bus line. That's about on par with the Yellow Line MAX. We've had zero fatalities in 19 years of service. More than 50% of all housing built in Portland in the last 20 years is on the streetcar line, and nearly 40% of all subsidized affordable housing is on the streetcar line. This is all part of a plan. This is happening because we put these things in place, we built the transit, we invested in the land use scenarios, and it's beginning to bear fruit.
And as we've talked about, go ahead. Can you define on the streetcar line?
Within a quarter mile.
Quarter mile, yeah. That's what I thought. Thanks.
Like other transit systems, the people who live along the streetcar line are the one using it. Our census demographics are 1-to-1 in terms of who rides the streetcar and who lives along it. So those investments in affordable housing or just generally jobs or institutions, those are paying dividends in terms of our ridership. 96% of our riders get to the streetcar by walking out their front door and boarding the train. Again, you're building walkable communities, you're building in transit ridership. As you build housing, you build ridership, and it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Similarly, you're building neighborhoods that people don't have to rely on cars. So 81% of our riders have one or fewer cars. I think about 40% have zero cars. So you're building a central city here where people are able to get about their daily lives and use the streetcar system in tandem with everything else to achieve their daily needs. There's some more demographics we've included in the annual report here, and here's just a few highlights in terms of the number of people who don't have driver's licenses or income levels, and we have demographics stemming from a number of surveys we've done with riders over the years. We talked a little bit about the business access transit lane on Grand Avenue. I think this is the fifth time I've been in this seat talking about this project. It took 4 years to build. It's actually in. This is a relatively simple fix that took us a while to get in place, but what we're seeing is a dramatic reduction in travel times between Stark and Hoyt on Grand Avenue. We basically just allowed cars to turn right and get that freeway traffic in the next lane over, and our travel times, we were taking upwards of 17, 19 minutes to go about 9 blocks. Now we're routinely doing that during PM peak during the scheduled time of about 2.5, 3 minutes. So much easier to build a schedule, easier to maintain staffing, and certainly better for customers who are trying to get about the city. Having a modern streetcar trying to operate on convenience and having that train stuck in traffic is not the reason we would build the system. So we have a number of opportunities on the horizon to be able to speed up the streetcar as well as improve service. Catherine alluded to a few challenges we've had. For quite a while, our base schedule was 14 streetcars. We cut that back to 12 in September of 2018. What year is it now? September of 2018. We reduced our service by 25% on the east side. And what you saw was almost 1-to-1 reduction in ridership. We have averaged about 1,000 riders per car running on the system for the last 20 years. Well, we went from 14 cars to 12.
Commissioner Hardesty has a question.
Yep.
Why?
Good question. Yeah. So we, I see you own 17 streetcars. The base service uses 14. One of those streetcars is the prototype from Oregon Ironworks. It essentially does not run. So now you have 16 streetcars. Another one was involved in a massive derailment back in May of 2018. That car is scheduled to come back online this summer. So basically you were running a 14-car service with 15 cars, meaning you had no spares. As a result, we were scheduling service but not running it. So we, rather than promising something we couldn't deliver, we dialed back the schedule to 12 cars. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And it takes years to get new train cars,
yep.
Street cars.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. No problem. We did add a 13th car back in service in September of this year, and you can see I've highlighted here where that occurred. Almost immediately, we saw our ridership increase, and it's amazing. If you actually run the trains and open the doors, people will get on. You can see our on-time performance here at the bottom. We're averaging about 80% on-time performance. Normal transit is in the 80 to 85%. And we still have a significant number of early arrivals, so if you're talking about whether or not we're on time, we're actually doing quite well there, 85-90%. Just a little more on safety and security. I want to highlight that about a year, about two years ago, we hired a safety officer. He's in the room here, Steve Fisher, if you can wave.
Back there.
Okay. And the stats I have here on the top show the dramatic reduction in collisions since we invested in that position. This is a position that's required by the FTA, but it's been extremely helpful for us in terms of reducing the amount of small collisions that keep our trains from running on a daily basis. And I've listed out here the most common types of collisions. These are not high-speed things, but they are things that happen almost every day, where somebody is turning right from the middle lane or swerving a little bit and just hits the streetcar just enough to keep us from running full service on that day. So Steve's training programs and keeping our operators up to speed on best practices has been a great investment. The other one was last year we had a significant number of rear-end collisions, and we had a very, very focused training program on avoiding rear-end collisions from our perspective, trying not to hit other cars. We've seen a great reduction in that year to year. Just last thing on the horizon, we have a lot of things happening in the streetcar world. One of those is a FTA grant that we were awarded for transit-oriented development planning. This is a land use planning grant that's being administered by the Bureau of Planning, PBOT, and Prosper Portland, looking at potential streetcar expansions in Northwest Portland to Montgomery Park, as well as potential routes on the east side to Hollywood. And that work is being managed largely by BPS and PBOT, looking at potential land use changes and the investments in transit and transportation that would have to go along with that, and thinking about what outcomes we can achieve in terms of affordable housing and affordable office as we're building out the city with the streetcar line. So that grant is underway, and there will be things coming forward from that project over the summer. But right now what we're doing is just engaging in the public outreach component of that. So there's not a lot to share there. We're also doing a lot of...
Commissioner Hardesty has a question.
I was going to let him finish.
I'll be done in just a second. Yep. So the other major thing we have going on that's important for the city recognized through the I-5 Rose Quarter project. You run a transit system through the Rose Quarter. As we think about the project, thinking about the freeway project, thinking about Lower Albina, we're talking about having a massive disruption to the streetcar service in that area. So I want to just keep them in your minds as we're moving forward through the I-5 Rose Quarter project. How are we going to manage your transit investment in that neighborhood through the construction period? It's an important conversation. A couple things that's improving the existing service. We are in the process of installing cameras on the streetcars right now. We have the funds to do that and beginning the procurement process. We are continuing a strong partnership with PBOT on the Rose Lane projects. We have several projects in the pipeline that we're looking forward to there. We have rolled out a transit asset management plan and a funding scenario so the city can better understand where it stands in terms of enough investment to keep the streetcar running and keep it reliable for the next 20 years. And then one of the more important things is we're doing a condition assessment on some of your older cars. So you have cars that are upwards of 20 years old. And we need to be able to make a decision soon about whether we want to refurbish those and what that means, or do we want to buy new ones. And the final piece before I hand it over to Dennis is just I want to acknowledge that we have some guests here from Brookville Equipment Corporation. We are on path to accept 3 new streetcars from them in 2021. So those are the things that are kind of happening to keep things moving on the horizon. But did you have a question real quick?
I do. Thank you. I actually have a couple of questions. So one is about your surveillance, your video surveillance. Talk about that. What does that look like? How do people know that they're being surveilled? What happens to the data after it's collected? All that good stuff.
Right. So currently the vehicles actually don't have cameras, and it's been an issue for security reasons, right? The proposal we have is to add cameras to both the exterior and interior of the car that the data would be collected on a DVR on the car, and it would overwrite in 30 days. So the only time we would download any video would be if there was a collision or a slip, trip, or fall. Working with the task force here at the city, we have made sure that our specifications will include that there will not be facial recognition abilities within the software system selected.
And who will have access to that data?
The data will be owned by the city. The DVRs will be locked, so there'll be a limited number of people at streetcar management staff who can unlock the cabinet and access and download the data. So typically that, I would say we do have cameras at our facility, both inside and outside. And to get to your question about notification, we provided advance written notice to all employees before we added those cameras so that they understood that they were going to be on site where they were going to be. And then if there's ever a need to use that camera data, it's downloaded, provided to risk management, where both the city attorney and risk management have oversight of the data.
And is there a scenario where law enforcement would have access to that data? And how would that process work?
I believe that law enforcement could request the data. They certainly have in the past. And we will work with the city attorney's office on the policy and practice for how that data is released and under what circumstances.
We have a real interest in making sure that we are protecting people's privacy rights, so look forward to seeing that. Okay. My other question really has to do with, like, the process. We've talked for over a year about the desire of this nonprofit to expand the streetcar. And there's a board for the streetcar, and then there are these other transportation tables. When does the city council, are you going to come to us and say, well, all these other people decided we should expand, and then it impacts our budget? How does that process
right.
work?
So but let's maybe back up and recognize that the city is the owner of the streetcar system.
I know.
You own the assets. So any decision associated with investment is made by city council. I wouldn't state that it's the board's desire as much as it is in actual plans. The transportation system plan, the metro's regional transit plan, all have streetcar projects in them. So there's public processes that go into the planning documents. So our role is to try and advance the projects that are involved in planning documents already. Ultimately, what we're looking about here is investments in the streetcar system, which would have to be approved by the city council for sure. Any land use changes would have to go through state approval. City Council. So our board doesn't really have any authority in that regard. What we have is recommendations. So we don't, just like any other policy associated with the streetcar, if we wanted to raise the fare, our board has no role in that. We can say we think this is a good idea or a bad idea, but ultimately it's your decision. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you.
I want to introduce Dennis real quick to say a little bit more about the board, and then we can go from there.
Thanks, Mayor, Commissioners.
Morning.
Dennis Allen, Chair of the Board of Portland Streetcar Inc. I'd like to thank you for your partnership. Our structure of a nonprofit public-private partnership is really a model, and it's going on almost 20 years now, a model for most streetcar systems around the country and certain other public-private partnerships. It allows the property owners who are helping pay for it, the city, the transit agency, advocacy groups that are important to reliable and safe transportation, key partners in the city like OMSI, PSU, and the Portland Trailblazers, all to be at the table, if you will, to help make decisions, governance, all those things that ultimately, as Dan said, get recommended to you all. So it's a big part of it. We appreciate that, and we're proud that it's been going on almost 20 years now, and this has continued to be a successful, in our eyes, structure. Of course, key to that is providing reliable, safe transportation, and therefore, as you know, 20 years is a long time. We're coming up on the need for new cars to increase this service, and you've been instrumental in helping advance that. And we're hoping to get our cars here soon. So to that end, we decided, or we're lucky to have in town, representatives from Brookville, who's the builder of these cars, to talk about their company and also the project that they're building for us. So we'll have them come up now.
Thank you very much.
And this will just be a quick hello. This is Rick Graham, president of Brookville, and Joel McNeil, who's the vice president of business operations. Did I make that
thank
up?
You.
Business development.
Business development.
Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, fellow commissioners. We just wanted to say thank you for the opportunity to partner with your city, and we look forward to delivering cars to you and having a long relationship as well.
Yeah. So, again, good morning, and thank you for having us. We've been in business for 100 years, and we manufacture rail equipment, custom-built to specific needs. And more specifically for what we're doing for Portland, it's in the streetcar market. We've been doing this for 2 decades. We have over 100 vehicles in operation across the U.S. But for us, it's very well known that Portland is the model city for streetcars. I mean, we're very vested in the industry. We know what's going on, and it is very well known that Portland is the premier city for streetcars. And the fact that we get to now be a part of that is a big honor for us. And so just thank you for having us here today. Thank you for the opportunity to be part of your streetcar system.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions?
I have a couple questions.
Dan.
So you mentioned the reliability benefits of the Grand Avenue transit lane improvements. It's, you know, always exciting to talk about new lines and expansion, but what could we do to improve our existing system to make it more reliable?
Yeah, our number one priority is always trying to make the existing system work better.
Yeah.
For me, the streetcar has to compete on convenience. And if we're running trains every 20 minutes, nobody should be expected to ride the streetcar. So what you'll hear from me, and I know it's the most expensive solution, but it's the thing that needs to get done, is we need more cars. The streetcars should be running every 10 minutes, not every 20 minutes. Otherwise, you have an investment that is not getting the most out of it. So we are aggressive in trying to figure out a funding scenario to get more vehicles on the roadway, but part of that is the Rose Lane project. So if we can speed up the streetcar, we can get more service out there. And there are a few projects out there that we can discuss about. And some of it's Rose Lane, some of it's signal timing, some of it's just scheduling and priorities, prioritization. But we have a number of small capital projects that could speed up what's out there.
Great. And then my second question is, we just celebrated the opening of the Louisa Flowers Apartments, which is an affordable housing development along the streetcar line on the east side. Are there more opportunities on the existing system for large-scale development, either for affordable housing or economic development?
Yeah, certainly. If you think about where the streetcar runs, there are all of your key development opportunities within the central city are on the streetcar line. You've got OMSI, you've got the ODOT blocks in the central east side, Lloyd District, certainly the Rose Quarter area, Lower Albina, and then the Broadway corridor on the west side. We serve all of those corridors. So if I was in your shoes thinking about where to make investments, where people can get housing and also have transportation costs brought down significantly, it would be along those alignments. So there's a very high quality, clean transit service running through all of those parcels. And you should be intentional about where you're putting your efforts in that regard.
I do have one more question related to the first, and I don't expect you to know this off the top of your head, but I would be really interested to know if we could truly unstuck a streetcar from traffic, how frequent we could get our existing cars running, because we know it takes years for you to build those cars for us. So it's going to take a while to add capacity in additional cars.
Yeah.
So you could...
It depends on the line.
Yeah.
And it depends on our willingness to give operators breaks, which I think we'd probably do.
I'm very willing to give operators breaks.
Some of this is a scheduling issue, and some of it's a fleet issue. But the reality of the situation is, unless you steal 15 minutes from a cycle, what you're doing is speeding up the transit vehicle, but then increasing the amount it's going to delay at the end point. Now, we run a very unique circular transit system, which is its own thing. But our trains go in a circle all day long on the loops.
Yeah.
And so adding another vehicle into that is the easiest way to improve headways. Otherwise, you need to take 15 minutes out of that cycle time in order to improve service. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So
headways, that's some transportation jargon that I need to get down.
But there are things we can do to improve the schedule, for sure. We're running about, it takes about an hour to do the loop. If we could get that down to 45 minutes, you could do the same service with three trains that you do with four.
That's great.
Okay. Working on it.
Yep.
Great.
Could you also just add another train?
If we had
another car to a train?
No, our trains don't couple. I mean, they do for towing reasons, but they're not really designed to be two-car trains. Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
Yeah. So we can tow at a very slow speed, but they're not designed to be coupled like that.
So do you make anything that's actually designed to be coupled like that?
I mean, yeah, it is. It's a different operation style. So you're not increasing frequency, but maybe capacity per vehicle by doing that. So it just depends on what the need is. Do you need more riders per vehicle arriving, or do you need more frequency?
Well, that's my question, right? Right. Is it like they're so packed, so people just decide, okay, I'm going to go and use some other mode, or
On the west side, the ridership is tremendous. On the east side, if we're about 3,000 rides a day, there's plenty of capacity in the trains on the east side. What's lacking is the frequency of service. In my opinion.
Very good.
Okay.
Thank you
very much. I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion to accept the report from Commissioner Hardesty, second from Commissioner Udaly. Any further discussion? Carla, please call the roll.
Fritz.
That was an excellent report, as usual. Thank you so much. Very detailed. It's really a success. Especially seeing how many affordable homes are built alongside the streetcar line. Thank you for all your work. Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Udaly.
Well, thank you for the report. Thank you, gentlemen, for being here today. I'm really pleased with how things are going, and I vote aye.
Wheeler.
Thanks for the report. Appreciate it very much. Thanks all for your dedication. I vote aye. Report's accepted.
Thank you.